This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Remember, he won a shootout in Ottawa with a broken stick once. He'll pick it up. The left-handed shot, Perreault. Weave in. Perreault to the deke. And it's stopped there by Hutton. 1-1 on the scoreboard. Here's Connor Sheary. First attempt of his career. Across the line. Ludin shoots and scores. And Connor Sheary will win it here for Buffalo, who sneaks out a 2-1 shootout victory here over the Winnipeg Jets.
Buffalo Sabres defeating the Winnipeg Jets by a 2-1 margin. It went to the shootout. It was an entertaining contest. The Jets, the better of the two teams for the majority of the game, but the Buffalo Sabres, on the strength of a early third period power play goal, were able to equalize, and then it went all the way to the shootout where Connor Sheary won it for the Sabres. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN Radio 12, at TSN 12, 1290.ca, pardon me, and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my regular colleagues, Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg.
I still hate the shootout.
I know you hate the shootout.
Oh, that was a good one.
That was, you know, seven rounds is a pretty entertaining shootout.
That was a relatively interesting.
I understand why you hate it. It's you know, a little bit of cartoon. And I mean, 3-on-3 overtime is also a little bit of a cartoon. It's just more entertaining than a shootout, necessarily.
What cartoon?
I don't know. Is it a little Bugs Bunny? I'm not sure. It's just sort of beauty is in the eye of the beholder on what cartoon you want it to be.
Ren and Stimpy, maybe?
Yeah, Ren and Stimpy didn't really have the staying power like a classic like Bugs Bunny. But, if that's your bag, then by all means, I'm not going to criticize you for it. But whatever cartoon you want it to be, that's the cartoon it can be, Mr. Ginsberg.
So who was Wile E. Coyote yesterday? Would that have been Carter Hutton?
Well, no, because the Coyote never the coyote catches. The Coyote always runs into the wall, so I'm not sure who the Coyote would be. But I would suggest
Carter Hutton would be the wall.
Because the Jets couldn't get anything past him for the majority of the game?
Thank you, Drew, for pointing that out.
Okay, I just want to make sure that we're torturing this for as long as we possibly can.
I always liked Foghorn Leghorn.
Yeah, I was a big Foghorn Leghorn fan.
Are we ready to move on this one, or you guys want to keep going on the cartoon references for a little while
longer?
Well,
you're for sure Elmer Fudd.
Anyways, it was a 2-1 Sabres victory over the Jets last night. The Jets conclude the four-game homestand, a successful one, of course, with a 3-0-1 record, 7 out of a possible 8 points. But you mentioned it, the story of last night's contest, certainly the performance of Buffalo Sabres goaltender Carter Hutton. If it wasn't for him and really the saves that he made through the first 40 minutes of the game, the third period was a little bit more even. But if it wasn't for Carter Hutton, and I mean Patrick Laine hitting a post with seconds to go in the game, the Jets would have been the victorious. Instead, it goes to the shootout, and the Sabres end up taking it by that 2-1 margin.
Yep, the pride of Thunder Bay, Ontario, and we've seen Carter Hutton have some really good games, guys, going back to his days with the Predators.
Yep, yeah, and then of course
Carter
the Blues
Hutton's,
last year.
He's come into Winnipeg on many occasions over the years and had some strong games. And even on Kyle Connor's goal in the second period, he got a piece of that.
Yes, he did.
And, you know, we got to talk about that pass. I mean, that was a beautiful pass by Laine. And, you know, Kyle Connor remains red hot, and he scores in the shootout. And, again, I thought he was one of the Jets' best forwards. I also thought Nikolai Ehlers had a sensational game, guys. And, you know, if you go back to midway through the third period, I mean, Nikolai Ehlers and Kyle Connor, they connect there. And if you remember on that play there, Kyle Connor starts the play off kind of around mid-ice and dishes the puck to Ehlers and gets it back to him. And, you know, if Kyle Connor gets that up on Carter Hutton, you know, that game's over 2-1. And, you know, he had some good opportunities in the overtime as well. But, I mean, the Sabres give them a lot of credit here. I mean, they kept that game close, and sure, Hutton deserves a lot of credit for it. And, you know, the Jets were clearly the best team for, I would say, probably 35 to 40 minutes, the first 35 to 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this Sabres team is much improved. You know, Jason Pominville is re-energized on that top line. You know, Casey Mittelstadt, I thought, was really impressive. I was also really impressed with Tage Thompson. He came over in the Ryan O'Reilly trade. You know, we also have to talk about, you know, Bogo. I mean, it was great to see him back in Winnipeg, but what was he doing there with 5 seconds left?
The best tweet someone had was, Bogosian had two options. He chose the third.
Yeah. I mean, you just hold the puck in the corner there. It's not like Line A was pressuring him there, and it's not like the Sabres were going to have an opportunity to break it back out the ice, you know, to get a scoring chance. You just don't make a mistake there, and that's what he did. And, I mean, can you imagine if that's how the game ends? You know, because, I mean, Line A got so close to scoring there. We saw how fired up Carter Hutton was during that game, especially during that second period.
Well, Buffalo, Drew, looked awful in their own zone. I mean, the Jets were completely dominating the possession, as we talked about, mm-hmm. for the first couple of periods. The Sabres started to come on there late in the second period, but, I mean, the Jets were clearly the faster team. And, you know, that's something that I think needs to be talked about on this homestand, because I think we saw the old Jets of last year in these four games. I mean, this is the skating team that creates off of the rush and uses their high-end skill to dominate, and you saw the forecheck, and you saw all of the puck pressure and all of that. Buffalo really couldn't do anything, especially in that first period. What did they have, four shots?
I believe it was something like that.
Yeah, 12-4 in shots.
Yeah, 12-4, 12-3 in shots.
No, 12-4.
Was it 12-4? Okay. The Jets controlled the Corsi in that first period. I mean, 76% to 24%. So,
there you go.
I mean, the ice certainly was tilted in that first period. It was tilted in the second period largely until the Jets sort of ran into a little penalty trouble late in the period, like you were referencing there, Ezzy. You don't often see a goaltender as fired up and sort of calling out his teammates like you did Carter Hutton last night. You saw him during that TV timeout skate to the bench and really give it to his teammates. Then you saw, you know, almost the shift right after that.
I love to see that.
As long as he can back it up. And he backed it up last night.
He can back it up. I mean,
if he doesn't, if it's all of a sudden 3-0 for the Jets, then he hasn't done his job either. Now, but he was the difference maker for there, so he can go to the bench and he can sort of light a fire under his teammates a little bit because he's been able to back it up with his play on the ice.
Well, and if you want to talk about Carter Hutton a little bit more, Drew, I mean, people forget that he was the better goalie for the Blues last year.
Yes.
I mean, his numbers were very good for a Blues team that kind of slept walk through the majority of the season, and then they started to turn it on basically after the trade deadline and then ended up missing the playoffs by 1 point. But, I mean, Hutton was an excellent backup goaltender for Pekka Rinne in Nashville. His numbers have always been good, and there's no reason to believe that, you know, Hutton was not going to be just as good, if not better, than Connor Hellebuck. I obviously think that Hellebuck is a better goalie, but, I mean, Hutton is a legitimate number one goaltender, and this was, you know, a huge acquisition for them. I mean, goaltending was a huge problem for Buffalo last year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Robin Lehner has gone to the island and he's played fantastic. I mean, Lehner's been great and Thomas Greiss has also been great. We talked about it last week with Greg Picker, who's the New York Islanders radio analyst, but I mean, Carter Hutton, I mean, he was the first star of that game last night, no doubt.
And he had full marks for his, you know, performance last night. You know, the Jets, you know, when you lose in a shootout like that, you can't be too upset. And, I mean, I think you saw it last night, Blake Wheeler with his post-game comments.
Well, I think it's giving up, you know, the extra point more so than, you know, not getting the extra point. Because this is a game that the Jets probably should have won in regulation.
Right. But the Jets also know that at the end of the game, if their game resembles that more nights than not, they're going to end up with 2 points. So that's why you take solace in the effort. Because that was, to your point, Ezzy, and I agree with you. And, you know, that was what the Jets looked like last year when they were performing, you know, as well as we've ever seen them perform. Less so on Wednesday night against the Washington Capitals. That really wasn't a good game by either team. But then you go back to last Friday against the Avalanche or Sunday against the Devils, and this homestand has reminded fans of what the Jets look like when they are clicking on all cylinders, Dave.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that for the most part, Drew, we've seen for the last week a Jets team get back to kind of their identity of playing quick and playing with the puck and being aggressive on the forecheck. And I think it's worked out in their favor, obviously, as the fact that they've gone 3-0-1 during the four games here in Winnipeg. So I think if you're a Jets fan, you're happy with the way the team has played. And the fact is, you know, your team is 11-5-2 and hasn't played their best hockey. That's not a bad position to be in.
And Dave, we talked about it last weekend, right? After the game against Colorado, how Nick Batan and Jack Roslovic weren't getting a lot of ice time on the fourth line, right? Because Andrew Kopp was on the fourth line at that point,
mm-hmm.
and now Matthew Perreault is obviously on that line, and, you know, their ice time is creeping up closer to 8 minutes. I think, actually, Nick Batan was over 8 minutes, and Roslovic
8:40 last night for Batan,
right.
And Roslovic last night, 7:50.
Right, there you go. So that's an extra, you know, 3 or 4 minutes of ice time,
mm-hmm.
as compared to the game against Colorado last Friday, and especially in that third period. You saw Patan, Roslovic, and Perreault out there. Maurice, I think, is now feeling more confident putting those three players out there, and I think that's a fourth line that might stick together here for a little bit.
I thought they looked good. I thought the Jets' lines, after they were shuffled a little bit, you know, TLC, with, you know, Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp were reunited, and I liked Line A up there with Connor and Little last night. I thought all four lines for the Jets last night performed admirably, and I expect that those will be the lines sticking together, at least for the next, you know, the next few games, and, you know, we'll see, obviously, how things shake out as they head out on the road. But I thought, Dave, last night that the forward group looked like the forward group should look. You had contributions all throughout the lineup. Didn't necessarily translate on the scoreboard, but I thought that all four of the Jets' lines were dangerous at various points during the game.
Yeah, and we got to remember, I mean, this is the Buffalo Sabres team also that came in very hot. Mm-hmm. They won three in a row. And
This is the first time, sorry, Dave, since 2014 that the Sabres have now won four games in a row, which tells you about how much they've struggled over the last 5 years or so.
Well, yeah. and they didn't look hot in that first period.
Right. No. I thought
oh, that, boy.
I thought the Jets came out and played, and like you said, if it wasn't for Carter Hutton, I mean, that score would have been, you know, well in Winnipeg's favor. Instead, he kept it close, 0-0 after one. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, at one point, and maybe it was after a speech, as I'd be curious to know, to look back, but I mean, I think at one point they held the Jets for 17 minutes without a shot.
Yeah, late in the second into the third.
The Jets still had the puck a lot, but they just didn't get a lot of shots on net. So, I mean, it's a credit to the Buffalo defense in that respect that obviously they weren't able to take the puck from the Jets, but at the same time, they were able to prevent a lot of those high-danger opportunities for Winnipeg. So that was a good thing from the Sabres' perspective, again, because what they needed to do was keep that game close.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, giving themselves that opportunity to get on the power play, get that goal, tie it up, and, of course, then it became a much closer. It almost felt, and it's funny, it's always when you're playing these Eastern teams, like a Western team, not specifically to the Jets, but whenever a Western team plays an Eastern team, that when the game is close and it's late in the game, you feel like neither team really wants to take that risk.
Sure.
Get the point, doesn't kill you if the other team gets a point, and then hope that you get two in the extra time.
Well, I think you make I was going to say, Drew, I think Dave makes a good point there about this Sabres team, because I mean, you compare this year's Sabres team to last year's Sabres team, it's very different. I mean, Jason Botterill was one of the most active general managers in the offseason, but when you're talking about Jeff Skinner, Casey Mittelstadt, Connor Sheary, Vladimir Sobotka, Patrick Berglund, mm-hmm. Tage Thompson, these are all players that weren't members of the Sabres last year.
But last year, and for the last couple of years, the Sabres have put out guys into their roster on a night
and
in, night
Rasmus
out.
Dahlin.
Yeah, night in and night out, who weren't NHL talent. Now you look up and down the roster, and sure, you subtract Ryan O'Reilly, and you know, Ryan O'Reilly is a very good hockey player, but when you can put in exchange for Ryan O'Reilly, you get three or four guys who are NHL caliber, it changes the dynamic of your roster. When, you know, you acquire a guy like Connor Sheary from the Penguins, and you don't really give up much, and you acquire Matt Hunwick alongside him. He didn't play last night for the Sabres, of course. You're just putting NHL talent on your roster, which is what the Sabres didn't have enough of over the last number of years. They finally got that NHL talent, and now they look like certainly a team that'll be competitive in the Eastern Conference for a playoff spot.
Yeah, I agree. And using my Maritime math, there were seven players
mm-hmm.
that played last night that weren't on the Sabres last year. So that's a third of the team.
And you can tell they're a much more competitive team. They are, I mean, the goaltending certainly is a huge difference for why they've been successful. You know, Carter Hutton has numbers of a number one starter, which they didn't have, not top flight number one starter, not a top five goalie in the league, but he's got a save percentage right around 920, and he's got a goals against average right at 2.5. So, you know, these are numbers that are going to keep you competitive game in and game out. And that, another thing for the Sabres last night that's key, and probably key for any team that's playing the Jets. The Jets had, what, 40 seconds of power play time in the entirety of the game?
And that's what they said. They said coming in that they had to limit the Jets' power play opportunities. So mm-hmm. I think the only thing was that offsetting penalty that both teams took that kind of nullified a Sabres power play opportunity.
That's right.
And the Jets ended up on the back end of that with 40 seconds.
Drew, it's a much better team than last year. I don't know if they're going to end up making the playoffs this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, come March, they're right in the thick of it.
The season won't end for for them at the trade deadline like it has for so many years in a row. You know, like you said, the only penalty the Sabres took in the whole game was Patrick Berglund's hooking penalty, which nullified the Nikolaj Ehlers tripping penalty back in the first period. So other than that, the Sabres played a very clean game.
So did the Jets. I mean, they got burnt on that one.
Yeah, you know, the Jets took two other penalties.
Yeah, they took three in total.
Yeah, three in total. So it certainly wasn't a one-sided game on the penalty score sheet. But it is something we'll talk about. We'll probably talk about it maybe next week. The Jets and their inability to actually draw penalties this year, I think they are 30th in the NHL in terms of drawing penalties. And can you imagine what their power play success rate would look like or how much more dangerous they'd be if they were able to draw penalties towards the top half of the NHL as opposed to the bottom half?
You know, it's hard to believe, boys, but the Buffalo Sabres are fifth overall in the NHL right now with 24 points. They've got the same amount of points as the Jets, so they're tied for fifth overall. And when you think about it, 19 games into the season, they've got 24 points. They had 62 points in 82 games last year.
Well, they're good. They're a better hockey team, and you can see it.
So they're probably going to hit 62 points by February,
yeah,
the way they're going now.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the latest in the Christian Vesalainen situation. There was talk he was going overseas. Now he's up with the Jets. We'll talk about Vesalainen and his status. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
With the Christian Vesalainen call-up, what's coming up for him in the next few days as a Winnipeg Jet?
We'll get him here. We'll get him working in some practices and then leave the rest to management.
That was from last night's post-game, Paul Maurice, with his thoughts and his plan for Jets forward Christian Vesalainen. He was called up from the Manitoba Moose late yesterday, shortly before puck drop, an interesting situation unfolding with the Jets' young forward. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN Radio 1290. This hour of the program is brought to you by the HSC Millionaire Lottery. The absolute final deadline in the HSC Millionaire Lottery is midnight Wednesday. Head to hscmillionaire.com right now for your last chance at one of six grand prizes, including luxury homes, cash, cars, and more. Christian Vesalainen, guys, we heard the report come out from Finland. I guess that was earlier in the week. Pekka Jalonen. Yep.
Thursday morning.
Yep. Thursday morning. Good friend of the program.
Good friend of the program.
Reporting that Christian Vesalainen is going to leave the Manitoba Moose.
Yep.
His rights were acquired by Jokerit, which plays in the KHL.
And Jokerit used to be in the Finnish Elite League. Now they're in the KHL.
Right. His rights were acquired from SKA St. Petersburg.
Yep.
And that Christian Vesalainen on November 17th, which is this morning, can exercise the out clause in his contract that stipulates if you're in the AHL, if he is in the AHL, as of November 17th, he has the right to leave the Manitoba Moose, the right to leave the Jets organization, and head back overseas to play for the remainder of the year or an indeterminate period of time. The Winnipeg Jets, late yesterday, November 16th, if you're looking at the timeline sort of thing, call up Christian Vesalainen. And, of course, once he's at the NHL level, he cannot execute that out clause that he has in his contract, with the caveat being, of course, that at any point in time in the rest of the season, if he is sent back down to the AHL.
Is it caveat or caveat?
I say caveat, but maybe I'm wrong.
I say caveat, but it doesn't matter.
Okay, yep. I mean, I think both are acceptable.
That's maybe the Latin pronunciation.
Maybe it's ye old English. I don't know.
Right.
In any event, at any point in time for the remainder of the year, if he is sent back to the AHL, he can then execute that out clause and head back to Jokerit in the KHL. So the question for you gentlemen is, what is going to happen with Christian Vesalainen? He's now back up with the Jets. Is he going to play for the Winnipeg Jets? Is he going to spend the rest of the year here in Winnipeg? Or do you think at some point in time he's back to the AHL, which then gives him the out clause to go back to Finland? How do you see the situation playing out? What do you think of the Jets' decision to call him up?
There's a lot of moving parts here,
aren't there, Drew?
Yeah. And you know, you explained the out clause that Vesalainen has in his contract, and you know what? You know, to me, Dave, is kind of the funniest thing about this whole situation. I don't know if it's funny for Moose head coach Pascal Vincent, but you know, Vesalainen has really started to come along for the Moose on that top line, and I think he's got 8 points now in 8 games, and he's starting to put the puck in the net. He had a 3-point game recently, right, Dave? I believe on the road.
One. Yeah, against Texas.
Yeah, so he had a 3-point game against Texas, and he had a pretty good homestand here recently. The Moose had those 4 consecutive games before they went out on the road. So, I mean, Pascal Vincent, I think, probably isn't too happy. Obviously, he can't control it, but, you know, he'd like to have Vesalainen in the lineup. And, you know, you wonder what's going to happen here with Vesalainen with the Jets, because you've recalled him. So if you're going to recall him, you have to think that Paul Maurice and Jets management want to play him. And if he is going to go into the lineup, who's going to come out? Is it going to be Nick Petan? Is it going to be Jack Roslovic? I mean, Petan and Roslovic are playing some pretty good hockey right now. And, you know, it's obviously, you know, I think logical to think, Dave, that it's going to be Petan or Roslovic, because those were the most recent healthy scratches, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to be, you know, Adam Lowry or Brandon Tanev. It's going to be one of Petan or Roslovic. I would probably argue that it was going to be Petan, just based on the fact that, you know, Roslovic has played more games for the Jets this year. But it's going to be very interesting to see what happens on this road trip. The Jets have, as you know, Drew, 4 games in 6 days, mm-hmm. including that back-to-back against St. Louis, Minnesota.
Yeah, Minnesota, then St. Louis. Next Friday in
right.
Minnesota. The Friday afternoon in Minnesota, the Black Friday game, which
yep.
is...
It's a 3 o'clock
It's becoming
start.
A tradition, because
yep.
it's the last few years now that
yep.
they've been playing that game. And then Saturday night, they play in St. Louis for the second time this season.
Right, so do you see Vesalainen on Monday against Calgary? Do you see him in the Vancouver game, or do you wait to maybe
Vancouver
see him?
Vancouver on Monday, Calgary on Wednesday.
Sorry, yeah, Vancouver on Monday. So do you see him against the Canucks, or do you see him against the Flames, or, again, do you wait for that back-to-back set? You know, as far as I'm concerned, I want to see more of Petan, Roslovic, and Perreault as that fourth line. I really liked what they did last night, and we talked about it. I realized they didn't necessarily put up a goal as a line, but I thought that they have chemistry, and obviously, you know, Petan and Roslovic have some familiarity there, so I wouldn't expect that line to necessarily be broken up. So if Vesalainen does go into the Jets lineup, what happens? As far as him going to Jokerit and playing in the Continental Hockey League, I mean, your guess is as good as mine.
That's a money thing. I mean, I don't obviously...
Well, he obviously has a contract in play here.
Yeah, we don't know any of the details of what the contract would likely look at overseas, but I mean, he makes, at the AHL level, he makes $70,000 here. You know that the contract overseas back for Jokerit, you know, the hometown team, or, you know, close enough to the hometown team, is going to be for significantly more. So, I mean, I understand it from Christian Vesalainen's perspective.
Well, now, though, he's making NHL money because he's up with the Jets.
Right. Now he's back with the Jets making NHL money. But if he had spent the whole year at the AHL level, he's making AHL money. Dave, I mean, you cover the Moose more than anybody in the city. What have you seen from Christian Vesalainen? Have you, you know, how has his demeanor been? Do you think there's any ramifications from being left off of the Finland trip that the Jets went on that's maybe influencing this decision?
That's a good question, Drew. I think his play on the ice has been very good. I think he has especially shown a lot of chemistry. I mean, we got Logan Shaw, who's the new sign up. They had 7 points in that game against Texas, leading the Moose to a 5-4 win over the Texas Stars after a poor start to the road trip against San Antonio Rampage, where they lost 5-0 in that kind of unusual
morning. That was a Wednesday morning?
Yeah, it's a 10:30 a.m. game, with those little school day games where you just hear kids yelling in the background for 3 periods.
Shout out to our boy Daniel Fink for doing a great job on the play-by-play.
Yeah, you know, Dan did a really good job. He had to come in for Mitch, who had some family's issues to deal with. So Dan Fink came in. He's the communications director generally for the Manitoba Moose, but he came in and did play-by-play from his junior days. He did a really good job. And so it's an interesting situation. I think that Vesalainen, on and off the ice, has been a good teammate and player, and so you can't ask for more in that regard. From my perspective, from a developmental perspective, I think, what are you going to do for a player that you're not going to play, or if you're only going to play him, are you going to play him 6 or 7 minutes? My philosophy, it's been this way with Roslovic, it was this way with Kyle Connor, it's way with Josh Morrissey,
yep.
is that you have these guys in the AHL for a reason. You have these guys because they need the time to develop, they need the time to play 16, 17, 20 minutes a game, they need to play on the first power play unit. I mean, those are the things. I mean, Sammy Niku as well, Mason Appleton. Like, again, I have this long-term view of player development as opposed to a short-term get them immediately into the NHL and get them that opportunity. So my philosophy has always been allow these guys to get that opportunity to develop properly, make mistakes where they're not going to get burnt. And that, to me, is the key because, you know, like Sammy Niku, for example, and I don't want to deviate too much, but staying with Finnish hockey, Sammy Niku could make a mistake at the AHL level and Coach Vincent is going to put him back out on the ice, mm-hmm. and it's not going to burn him. Whereas in the NHL, that could get him stapled to the bench. I'm just saying that there's a developmental
it's
opportunity
a very good point.
Right. That these guys yeah. have in American hockey
but with
that they don't have in the NHL.
But with Vesalainen seemingly not willing to stick it out at the AHL level for this season, what's best for his development? I mean, how do the Jets handle that? I mean, clearly the Jets don't want to lose him to go back to the KHL, because if there had been an injury, you know, if one of the Jets, you know, top nine skill forwards had been injured, Vesalainen seems like he was going to be the first call up.
Yeah, so, I would say so.
So what do the Jets do now? I mean,
well,
you don't
and you can also call up a Seth Griffith.
You could call up
a Mason Appleton.
You could, but Vesalainen seemed like he was, not the next man up, very close to being the next man up.
And that's because he started the season with the Jets.
Right, so how do the Jets play this out now? What happens? He's, you know, are you okay with him sitting for this entire four-game road trip and just practicing with the team as they practice? Are you okay with him going back to the KHL if you send him back to the back to the AHL? Is he going to be with the Jets organization, the Jets NHL franchise for the rest of the season now?
Well, we don't know that. And
well, but the Jets control the cards, so the Jets can decide how they want to play it out. So how do you think the Jets are going to play it out for the remainder of the season?
Well, yeah, we don't know that right now, right?
Sure.
But the Jets right now, I don't think the Jets, the Moose, the True North organization, I don't think anybody wants, Christian Vesalainen himself, I don't think he wants to be a healthy scratch for four straight games. He wants to play. It goes back to Dave's point. And to answer your question about where Vesalainen's development is best suited, it's where he's going to be playing and where he's going to be happy. Maybe he's not happy playing for the Moose, but he's got to be playing. He can't be a healthy scratch. He has to be playing hockey. So if he's going to be happier playing for Jokerit in the Continental Hockey League,
making however many millions of dollars a year.
Let him go play in Jokerit. Now, I think the Jets are going to give him an opportunity to play here. I really do think he is going to play on this road trip, and we'll see what happens after that.
And I think the Jets got lucky in the sense that he happened to be playing well in those last couple of games. I think that if you have to make this move and Christian Vesalainen isn't playing well for the Moose, has no points, isn't doing the things he needs to do on the ice, then it makes the recall a little bit more difficult. But because he had two goals and assists in his last game, because he's skating well, because he's creating for his teammates, I think as a result of that, the Jets can therefore point to that and say, well, he's earned the right to a recall. Similar to what we saw with guys like Andrew Kopp when they got sent down, Adam Lowry when they got sent down. It happens, and then it allows the team to pull him up.
Dave, going back to what I said before, the only problem I have with Vesalainen going into the lineup is that I think Nick Petan has played some good hockey as of late. And if Nick Petan is going to be a healthy scratch just to get Vesalainen into the lineup, I think that's a problem, because you want Petan playing too.
Too many players, not enough spots to go around. It'll be a very interesting week upcoming for the Jets and Christian Vesalainen to see when and if he gets his opportunity to enter to the Jets lineup. When we come back, Kristen Anderson of Post Media is going to join us. The Jets are into Calgary on Wednesday. We'll talk to her about the Flames season thus far and talk about the Jets road trip. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You have to look yourself in the mirror and you got to battle as a goalie. Yeah, there's a lot of things you can't control. And if you were just looked at my numbers, which I think a lot of people do, you'd think I've had an awful year, but it hasn't felt like that. Obviously, there's been a lot of goals scored, but you can't control some things that happen in front of you. And to blame guys would be an easy thing to do, an easy out. The harder thing is to just go and work hard and try to climb out of this thing.
That's Flames goaltender Mike Smith off to some struggles early this season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth tooting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
The Jets are into Calgary on Wednesday night to face the Flames. And to talk more about the team from Hogtown, we're joined by Kristen Anderson of Post Media. Kristen, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
Kristen, we just heard from Mike Smith, and his numbers really aren't great to start the year, to put it mildly. An 876 save percentage, 3.48 goals against average. Fortunately for the Flames, David Rittich is performing admirably with a 935 save percentage. Are we seeing a changing of the guard in the Flames goaltending situation? What's happening with Mike Smith and David Rittich, and how do you see it playing out over the next little while?
Well, I think at least temporarily that's kind of the way it's going to shift. Mike Smith just hasn't been good enough this season. It's just been a really struggling year for him. 36 years old. I know so much has been made about his age heading into this season, but he's really shown it in the last few games. Unfortunately, I don't know if he's going to be able to snap out of it. That's not to say that Mike Smith isn't going to be the number one goaltender for the Flames in January or even in February, as the Flames kind of are striving to head into the back into the playoffs this year. It's really been apparent if you look at some of his goals and some of his blatant, obviously needed to have save type goals. The third goal on Thursday night against the visiting Montreal Canadiens was just, it wasn't a timely goal to let in. It wasn't a great goal. It was a blooper. It kind of just went through his pads. Those are just saves that the Flames just need at the moment, especially in a game against the Montreal Canadiens where they absolutely dominated for most of it. I mean, at least on the shot clock, the Flames, peppered Carey Price with over 40 shots. And, it's an interesting contrast that night because you look at a guy like Carey Price who has openly struggled and has openly battled some confidence issues this season, and he looked kind of superhuman on Thursday night against the Flames. So that's not to say that Mike Smith can't get back to that form, but right now they're going to go with David Rittich, who, lots to like about his game. He's square to the puck. He's really calm in net. He's a competitor. He's got confidence right now, and the Flames need to ride that. With a 5-1-0 record so far this season, 191 goals against average and a .935 save percentage, like you mentioned, numbers are good. But do we know enough about David Rittich to give him the starter's net for a while? I mean, that's the question I think the Flames are going to ask themselves. Tonight's going to be a good indication of whether or not, they can kind of rely on David Rittich. And he's played the Oilers before, but I think you're going to see David Rittich in the next stretch of games, at least through this homestand. The Flames host the Golden Knights on Monday, and then, as you mentioned, the Winnipeg Jets come to town on Wednesday. So I think we're going to see a little bit of a changing of the guard. I don't know how long it's going to be. I guess David Rittich can only kind of see how much David Rittich can give the Flames, and time will tell with that. But the book is largely out on David Rittich and what he can do for the team as a number one. So we don't really know, but I think for the next little bit we'll see him in net.
Kristen, in your answer there, you mentioned the game on Thursday night between the Flames and the Habs, and the Habs obviously won that game 3-2. I actually watched the majority of that game, and for my money, Matthew Tkachuk was the best player for the Flames. He had a couple of goals on that second line. Sam Bennett is obviously now on that second line, and Tkachuk is up to 21 points in 19 games. It's hard to believe that he's only 20 years old, and this is already his third full season, but even if he doesn't keep up this point-per-game pace, is it safe to say that Tkachuk is having one hell of a breakout season?
Yeah, it's been coming, and it's been coming for him. I think his first season in the NHL was sort of testing the waters. He got a decent amount of points, but it was the way that he sort of played, I think, that really kind of set the tone. And then now he's finding this offense. And confidence is huge too. He has that in droves, and he's had that ever since he kind of stepped on to the ice with the Flames. Of course, having a pedigree like your dad playing in the NHL and growing up around an NHL locker room, it's so funny when these types of games happen, like this, the shift in the momentum. At first, it was all about Matthew Tkachuk and the game that he was having, buzzing around the ice. Obviously gets that power play goal, and he's so integral for the Flames' first power play unit. But he's able to score in all these different situations now that we're seeing. He's good in front of the net. We've seen him tip pucks. He practices it every day, tipping pucks. I mean, I know it's such a little thing, but he's so good at it in terms of the timing, in terms of, you know, having the courage. I know Bill Peters calls it courage to stand in front of the net and sort of face NHL shots and tip them and get a piece of them and get them past goaltenders. He's rounding out his skill set, and it's kind of like every goal, every point he scores is a big one. And that's really only driving up his value. His entry level contract is up at the end of this year, and I know Brad Treliving is probably already working some numbers and working out how he can, how much Matthew Tkachuk is going to make next year, because he is a huge part of this team. Like, he is, you know, Mark, everybody talks about Mark Giordano being the heart and soul of the team, and Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan obviously have the skills, and they've brought in Elias Lindholm, who's an excellent fit on that top line, but, like, Tkachuk is one of their emotional engines. And he can change a game, you know, with the course, with a shift, with a goal. Like, he is just that impactful. He's also matured. He's drawn a lot of penalties. I think he's always leading the league in drawn penalties. But he's kind of learnt the line to walk, I think. I mean, last year got him in trouble a little bit. The game in Detroit obviously was kind of a miscue on his part. From last year, but he's really matured. I think you're seeing a mature Matthew Tkachuk, and I think it's only going to bode well for the Flames in the future.
Kristen, a player fans here in Winnipeg are familiar with after he spent two seasons here is Michael Frolik. He's more, he's an even Steven guy, usually gets a similar number of goals to his assists. This season, I was looking at his stats, he has 7 goals in 18 games and no assists. So what's going on with Michael Frolik?
Yeah, I mean, 2 of those goals are empty netters. I hate to point that out. It's, like, a goal is a goal, but 2 of those goals are empty netters. But yeah, I mean, having and Michael Frolik is such a steady guy. As you guys saw in Winnipeg, as everybody's seen over the course of his NHL career, he really developed his defensive game in Chicago. It was funny, I was talking to him about when Joel Quenneville was fired, and he kind of credited him for, you know, helping him develop that side of his game. So he's got all these different tools in his toolbox. Brad Treliving kind of calls him a Swiss Army knife, even though he's from the Czech Republic. But he kind of can do everything. So he penalty kills. I know that he's a great fit on the second line with Matthew Tkachuk and Michael Backlund as kind of the Flames shutdown line. But Sam Bennett's been placed there, you know, of late, and they're trying to work in James Neal at that position as well, too, and get him going offensively. But having Michael Frolik, who can kind of be slotted in anywhere, he can kind of do it all. He's a good soldier. He's a hard worker. At the beginning of the year, he was a healthy scratch, and Bill Peters, you know, he came out to the media and said we need to see more from Michael Frolik. Like, he's a great worker, hard worker in practice, but he's got to be doing that in games. And part of that is coming off of a major, major facial surgery from last year, and he really wasn't the same after that. So it's been a nice, I think, for the Flames, you know, when they've been kind of looking at offense elsewhere and also just having a guy that is reliable, I think Michael Frolik really fits that bill for the Flames.
Kristen Anderson of Post Media is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Calgary Flames. The Jets into Calgary on Wednesday night to face the Flames for the first time this season. Kristen, the real deal, James Neal, is looking like a bad deal so far for the Flames. He's getting paid $5.75 million, and he's garnered only 3 goals and an assist through his first 19 games. What's been the matter with James Neal so far this season, and is there any sign that he is going to break out of these doldrums?
Yeah, it's sort of been an ordeal with James Neal. Just use the pun. The thing with so much has been made about his contract for the rest of his career here in Calgary. 5 years at, like you said, just over $5 million. That's a heavy price tag for a guy who has only scored 3 goals this year in 19 games. Like, it's just not what I think the Flames had in mind when they, you know, saw that he was available and tried to court him. And Mike Quamador even courted him and told him to go to Calgary. And I think, like, you look at him and you look at his body of work. So he's got 266 goals over the course of 722 NHL games. He's on the cusp of 500 NHL points. Like, that's longevity. Like, that is, and 20 goal seasons, you know, in the past 10 years he's been in the NHL. Like, you know that he is capable of offense, but the Flames just simply haven't seen it. Now, I don't know if that is a result of him being promised that he would play with Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan, maybe the first line or second line minutes, and he's now playing on the third line, which I think is a good spot for him right now. He'll play with Dylan Dubé tonight, who's a young 20-year-old center slash winger who has lots of energy and plays with lots of speed, which kind of seems to energize him when he's played with him in the past. And then Mark Jankowski, who's playing some of the best hockey that he has since he's been with the Flames. So it's I don't know if it's just accepting that he needs to be, you know, find his role wherever he can, and do what he can with the minutes he has. I know he's used to being a little bit more involved, but the Flames are trying to get him involved. And like I said, they've placed him with that second line with Matthew Tkachuk and Michael Backlund. He didn't get anything going then. They benched him in the third period in San Jose to kind of get him going. And so he only played like 8 minutes. I don't know, to send a message. It's just, you know, I think they're trying to get him going in every way they can. He's playing second power play minutes, second unit power play minutes. So, I mean, I just don't know what else we can sort of expect from James Neal. But maybe this is it. Maybe he is inconsistent. Maybe he will score 20 goals, but, you know, the 20th goal gets the Flames into the playoffs, and maybe he'll score big goals in the playoffs. So it's sort of, it's kind of like maybe this is just what we're seeing. Maybe this is what James Neal actually is. And keep in mind, he only has like 4 goals in his last 35 regular season games. So dating back to last year, but he was really good in the playoffs, as everybody knows. So, it's just a waiting game, I think, with James Neal. But certainly that contract will come back to haunt him, if things don't pan out here in Calgary for him.
Kristen, when the Jets play the Flames next Wednesday night, there are going to be a lot of familiar faces on the back end. Mark Giordano, you mentioned earlier in the interview, TJ Brody, obviously good Manitoba boy, Travis Hamonic, but there are 3 new faces on that Calgary back end: Noah Hanifin, Juuso Välimäki, who of course is a rookie defenseman, and Rasmus Anderson, who played a little bit for the Flames last year. Obviously the defensemen that were on the team last year that aren't this year: Dougie Hamilton, Brett Kulak, and Michael Stone. Is this group of Calgary defensemen better than last year's group, in your opinion?
I think it's a different back end. And keep in mind that Flames are playing a totally different system, like a Bill Peters system that really focuses on moving the puck from the back end. So they have, all of a sudden, they have these two, and I have to mention these two young puck-moving defensemen in Juuso Välimäki and Rasmus Anderson. They're playing on the third pairing. Juuso Välimäki was their first round pick from 2017. Young guy, inexperienced, but man, is he exciting and loves to move the puck, and he plays physical. Like, he's an up and comer, but he's definitely like the whole package. And then Rasmus Anderson, who's a little bit older than Noah Hanifin. And it's so funny because we look at this third pairing as the young kids, but really Rasmus Anderson is a year younger, a few months younger than Noah Hanifin, but has played a few less games in the NHL. And Noah Hanifin, that being said too, is a young guy still. So he's bound to make mistakes, but he's a really smooth skater, a puck moving defenseman. So all of a sudden they have this mobility from their back end, which is creating and generating a ton of chances for the Flames. So you're seeing their shot totals come up. You're seeing a little bit more flair from their offense because the defense is able to move the play forward. So it's been a different year in that perspective, just because they're adjusting to the new systems, and perhaps that was why Mike struggled so much at the beginning of the season when the team wasn't playing so good defensively in front of him. Still, it's been an improvement. I would say, you know, the jury's still out. Is it better? I've seen an improvement for sure. You look at a guy like, I mean, they had to obviously make a cultural change, or they had to make some type of change in trading away Dougie Hamilton, who is a fine, you know, right shot defenseman, a big right shot defenseman, who is still capable and skilled in the National Hockey League. He's a stud. But I think this current group that they have, it just complements the rest of their group in so many different ways. So you have her first pairing in Mark Giordano and TJ Brody, and then the second pairing was, as you mentioned, Travis Hamonic and Noah Hanifin. And then this third pairing, which has been really exciting. And they've thrown in, I know Michael Stone and Dalton Proud are the two kind of extras. Michael Stone was played in San Jose for Rasmus Anderson, so they could kind of move him in if they need to. But it's definitely been a change the Flames, I think, are happy with. I think that's kind of the one area of the game that they're pretty satisfied with is their back end.
Kristen Anderson covers the Calgary Flames for Post Media. Kristen, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me on. Awesome.
Take care, Kristen. Thanks again. When we come back, we're going to discuss this Jets' upcoming four-game road trip. It starts on Monday in Vancouver. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
So Buckland there on the first period power play. Here comes Brian.
That proved to be the game-winning goal from when the Jets and the Canucks met earlier this season. It was a 4-1 final for the Jets defeating the Canucks. A rematch comes Monday night in Vancouver as the Jets start a four-game road trip. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, you can get Bernstein's delivered right to your door. Get all the good stuff at shopbernsteins.com. Citywide delivery, freshly made and fresh frozen foods delivered right to your doorstep. That's at shopbernsteins.com.
And Drew, shout out to at Tasting Winnipeg.
Yes.
Who featured... Yes. The Illegal Curve Sandwich earlier this week.
That's right. I sent that to you.
It was Wednesday, right?
I don't remember the day it was, but I saw that on Instagram, and it was like a nice quality photo of the Illegal Curve Sandwich,
yep.
Sharing the love. Yep. And so we, of course, give them a shout-out for giving us and our a sandwich and Bernstein's Deli a shout-out in turn.
Yeah, and we obviously know already that it's the best sandwich in the world.
Right. There's no question about that. So I mean, now,
find me a better sandwich.
You can't. It's just not possible.
Chicken schnitzel, grilled salami.
Uh-huh.
Onions.
You're just making yourself hungry is
mustard.
What you're doing. Yeah, stop. It's 9:50 in the morning.
All on thick cut city rye bread.
Are you almost done?
Is this a live read? I don't understand.
I'm not sure what he's doing. I'm not sure what he's doing either. Mm-hmm. Anyways, the Jets start the four-game road trip on Monday night in Vancouver, Wednesday night in Calgary, and then
the
back-to-back.
Wednesday night in Calgary, right?
Yes.
What's Calgary's name? Nickname?
Hogtown or Cowtown?
When is it? I've never heard it called Hogtown before. Who calls it Hogtown?
Maybe I'm confused. Is Toronto Hogtown?
Toronto's Hogtown.
Oh, sorry.
Kristen's very nice. She didn't say anything. I'm not so nice.
Not so nice.
I was like, when you said Hogtown, I thought, does Drew know something? I don't know, because I've always called it Cowtown.
Sorry, maybe I'm confusing it.
I just wanted to make sure.
Very good.
I don't want our listeners to think that we denigrating our fair city to the west.
Is Toronto even called Hogtown?
I think it is. I think Toronto's Hogtown. Yeah. I think Calgary is Cowtown.
It's more the Big Smoke.
Yeah, I think more people. I don't think people generally reference it as Hogtown, but I think that it is. You could use Hogtown for Toronto, but you
wouldn't
use it for
Calgary. Steel Town.
I've confused my animals. Is basically what you're saying.
Yeah. But I don't want to insult the folks who listen to us in Calgary.
Yeah. Well. Anyways, can we talk about the road trip? How about that?
I was saving that one up.
Okay. Anyways, thank you.
What's the difference between a hog and a pig?
Don't ask me. I keep kosher.
I don't know, Ezra. You know, that sounds like a research project you're going to take on for the remainder of the show, and you get back to us in the final hour with an answer to that question. How about that? The Canucks 10-9-2 so far this season. They're second in a pretty bad Pacific Division. The Flames 10-8-1. They're third in the Pacific Division. No team in the Pacific Division has more than 10 wins, so you can see that the division in and of itself is struggling. The Canucks, they score a lot, and they give up a lot.
Yep.
75 goals against for the Canucks, which I believe might be tops, not quite tops in the NHL, but second most goals they've given up in the entire NHL, only behind the Ottawa Senators. So the Canucks are succeeding despite themselves. They have a minus 10 goal differential, so you don't think necessarily that they're going to be able to keep this going. But the Jets need to be aware that the Canucks have the offensive firepower, having scored 65 goals this season.
Absolutely. And, you know, this Vancouver Canucks team, you know, as you mentioned, I think is exceeding expectations, and, you know, we'll see where they're at, you know, 2 or 3 weeks from now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, right now they're in a playoff spot, and, you know, looking at this upcoming 4-game road trip as a whole, boys.
Yes.
I mean, you've got 3 teams out of 4 that are in playoff spots right now, right?
Minnesota, Calgary, and Vancouver. St. Louis, of course, struggling back at 7-7-3, although they are coming off a win against the Vegas Golden Knights most recently.
Yeah, that was last night.
Yeah.
And that was a huge win, actually, because
probably saves Mike Yeo. Every win that the well, Blues put saves Mike Yeo's job for another week, well, I think, or another day, at least.
And you're not incorrect in saying that, Drew, because, I mean, right now, the LA Kings are the worst team in the league. The Kings have no chance at making the playoffs. I think we all agree on that, right?
They've scored 36 goals in 18 games.
Well, I mean, yes,
is that good?
I mean, no, it's not.
Right, and
it's not good.
I don't think Carl Hagelin's really going to change anything. But you look at the Blues right now, and they're 4 points behind the Calgary Flames for that last playoff spot. And sure, they've played 2 less games than the Flames, but the point is they've only got 7 wins in 17 games,
mm-hmm.
and you know that's a team that, you know, is having some trouble scoring goals. And, you know, you look at this upcoming 4-game road trip, and, you know, I could easily see the Jets winning 3 of these 4 games. I could see them winning all 4 games, maybe because they've got that back-to-back. You say, well, it's going to be real tough to steal all 4 points in St. Louis and Minnesota, right? But, I mean, the way they played at home here,
yeah,
I think is going to set up very nicely for going into Calgary and going into Vancouver. As you mentioned, the Jets beat the Canucks earlier this season 4-1. And sure, Elias Pettersson is probably, you know, the runaway Calder Trophy favorite right now.
And if I recall correctly, he didn't play in that game.
Yeah,
because that would have been when he'd been injured on the Matheson hit.
And they've got a lot of talent. I mean, Bo Horvat, Drew, as you know, has, you know, taken over that number one center role. I mean, this is a much different Canucks team. I mean, it's not the Sedins Canucks anymore. It's, you know, the Bo Horvat, Elias Pettersson, Brock Besser Canucks.
The Flames and the Canucks, the Monday game and the Wednesday game, they're both very similar teams in that you know who drives the bus on those teams. And if you can minimize the impact that those players have, that the Matthew Tkachuks have, that the Bo Horvats have, that the Petterssons have, you're likely going to win because they don't have the depth behind those players. They don't have the third and the fourth lines that the Jets do that can, you know, if the Jets play to their capabilities, if they play like we saw for the majority of the game last night, and if they play like we saw for the majority of the homestand, the Jets are going to be the better of the two teams that are on the ice.
Right.
Just the reality, you look at the rosters, you know, after, you know, the Horvat and Pettersson, I mean, the Canucks' third and fourth line is a mishmash of guys who really aren't NHL caliber.
Right, and, you know, we've taught another guy we should mention is Jake Virtanen. He's got 8 goals, and, you know, you mentioned that the Canucks have 65 goals on the year,
mm-hmm.
but almost half of those goals come from those three players. Bo Horvat and Elias Pettersson have 10 goals each, and then Virtanen's got 8. So you're talking about 28 of their 65 goals.
Yeah.
You know, that's what, 45, 46% of their goals are coming from three players. You know, Brock Besser, obviously, you know, missed some time. So he's still trying to find his game early on this season.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you mentioned it. I mean, you know, you go down the lineup and you've got players like Antoine Roussel and, you know, Sven Berchi on the third and fourth lines. Brendan Leipzig, obviously, you know, is getting some opportunities to play for the Canucks. But you're right. I mean, this isn't a very deep team, and it's quite frankly a team that the Jets should beat. You know, especially when you look at, you know, the defense that they trot out there, and, you know, the goaltending, even though, you know, you got to give Jacob Markstrom credit, you know, he's kind of held the fort down.
Yeah.
You know, his numbers haven't been good, and Anders Nielsen's actually been the better goaltender.
And,
so,
and the best pass of the year, it was Richard Backman's pass earlier in the week right onto the tape of the opposition, ending up right in the back of the Canucks' goal. You know, it all gets underway. It'll be a couple late nights, Monday night and Wednesday, 9 o'clock puck drop Central Time. Games you can hear, of course, live on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the Jets. Murat Atesh of the Athletic.com joins us for more Jets talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are For the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. This hour, the program is brought to you by the HSC Millionaire Lottery. The absolute final deadline in the HSC Millionaire Lottery is midnight Wednesday. HSC needs your help, and your chances to win big have never been better. Go to HSCMillionaire.com right now.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com, he covers your Winnipeg Jets, a good friend of the program, Murat Atesh. Murat, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. How's everybody?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Doing well.
That's good. Glad to hear it, Murat. Obviously, the Jets, a successful four-game homestand, 3-0-1, dropping the shootout last night to the Buffalo Sabres. You know, watching these last four games for the Jets, it seems like the team resembled the team we saw for a lot of last year. You know, tough on the puck, forechecking with some good ferociousness, keeping teams bottled in their own zone. From your perspective, would you agree that this looked more like last year's Jets than we've seen earlier in the season?
Yeah, I think we're starting to see, you know, last year's Jets or this year's version of them in a wave.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a huge portion of yesterday's game against Buffalo that I was thinking to myself, this is the closest version of that kind of control that I've seen all season long. But I've caught myself thinking that a couple of times on the homestand, and then, you know, a few minutes go by and it ends. Something changes. And even last night, Paul Maurice was saying that they kind of got a little bit too cute, a little bit too indirect was his word, and that that they were skating like a team that was looking for passes as opposed to a team that was looking like shots and opening things up that way. And I got to say, I agree. There was a point about two-thirds of the way or halfway through the game there where it changed from kind of essentially the best version of these Winnipeg Jets to something a little bit different. And I think that's going to be their challenge, is keeping that consistency up.
Brought, obviously, Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine hooked up there in the second period for that Jets goal, and they're playing together on that second line with Brian Little. When you watch that line and what they've been able to do 5-on-5, if you're Paul Maurice, are you keeping those two players, or I guess those three players, together for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, I think you got to go back to that. I absolutely think you got to go back to that. Kyle Connor's been heating up over the last week or two as well. I've got a piece up at The Athletic talking about whether or not he can get to that point of driving a line on his own. He has been the Jets' best player on the ice a couple of times so far this year, and Paul Maurice says that those couple of times are the last couple of days, or last couple of games, pardon me. There's a really special thing that happens if, in fact, Connor and Laine can find a long-term chemistry, because obviously Ehlers is cooking on the top line, and the Jets seem loath to separate Scheifele and Wheeler at any point. So if that top line is working, then you need that second line that we were not able to see any chemistry from when it was Ehlers, Laine, and Little. So Connor's a little bit different. He'll play a little bit more on the insides than Ehlers instead of those outside-in passes. Connor seems to be lightning quick and have patience at the same time in terms of waiting for things to open up and attack the middle. One beautiful cross-ice feed for a goal does not long-term chemistry make, but if these guys can put it together, and I believe they can, it gives the Jets that sort of unparalleled offensive depth that we keep talking about as analysts, but maybe they haven't quite shown on the score sheet at 5-on-5 yet this season.
You know, Murat, earlier this month for The Athletic Winnipeg, you wrote about the dominant power play keeping Blake Wheeler afloat somewhat, and as he searched for 5-on-5 consistency. What have you seen in his game since you wrote that article?
He's definitely, he's had a couple of big nights since then, a couple more 5-on-5 points. He's still well off his typical 5-on-5 point scoring pace, and so is almost every single Winnipeg Jet. I think somebody pointed out to me yesterday that it was only Brandon Tanev that has kind of more points per minute at 5-on-5 this season than last, and everybody else is behind their pace. Last year, starting actually at about exactly this time of year when Matthew Perreault returned from health and you had Perreault and Connor on the same team, with the Tanev, Lowry and Copp line united. And that was sort of the first real look of that was November 16th. So a day ago last year, everything sort of took off from there. This season they're kind of looking. Oh, and to finish that thought, pardon me, the Jets were a top five team in almost every 5-on-5 metric from that point through the rest of the season. They're middling right now when you look at the shot attempts, the expected goals, those sorts of underlying numbers at 5-on-5. Still 16th, still like in the mid-teens in a lot of those respects. And with the talent that they have, I don't believe they should stay there. And I think that really does, that changes when Wheeler starts sort of dominating at 5-on-5 the way that I don't really think, just from a visual aspect, that changes when you start shooting a little bit more as well. It seems to me, over the last couple of games anyways, my eyes are telling me he's passing up a lot of prime shooting opportunities.
Murat Atesh joins us on the program. Murat covers the Jets for TheAthletic.com here in Winnipeg. Murat, you know, it's sort of amazing that with a team that of the high-end talent that the Jets have, that they actually rank dead last in terms of power play opportunities, with only 51 power play opportunities on the season, tied with the Pittsburgh Penguins, another team with high-end talent. You know, why do you think that is? Does that have something to do with sort of the slower pace the Jets were playing at earlier in the season? It just strikes me as a really sort of weird anomaly that the Jets team just doesn't seem to be getting as many power play opportunities as you think they would.
Yeah, you know what? That's tough for me. That's tough for me to say for sure. I mean, there were those first couple of games of the season where they were taking penalty after penalty in a row, and you were sort of wondering when the makeup calls would start coming the Jets' way. You know,
We may have just lost Murat, so we're going to try and get him back on the line there. It sounds like his phone may have just dropped, as often happens with cell phones in this day and age.
Like, he physically dropped it?
No, I don't think he physically dropped it. I think the call got dropped, as I believe is the technical term. I'm not a cell phone scientist, though, nor do I think that
are there
God
cell phones
actually
are there,
exists.
I was going to say, are there such things?
Only in Hogtown. In Hogtown and Cowtown. Those are the only places where the cell phone scientists exist. You got an answer from Sean, though, about what the difference is between a hog and a pig?
Did I?
I thought he said they emailed you about that.
Well, yeah, it's possible. I think we do have Murat back on the line.
Oh, so you don't want to spend time talking about the hog-pig question? Anyways, they think we have Murat back on the line. Murat, are you back with us?
Yeah, I'm back. I'm not sure what happened. I was able to hear you quite clearly, Ezra, so pardon me.
All good. You were talking about the Jets' power play and sort of the reason or the logic behind the lack of opportunities so far this season.
Yeah, I can't see it. I can't put two and two together there. It might just be a factor of one of those small sample size things that we're seeing, you know, this early on in the season. I'm not panicked about that, though. I've started to see some of that consternation on Twitter. There are a couple of, you know, there was what I thought was a missed interference call on Rasmus Ristolainen last night. And then to see the uproar about that and to see Twitter sort of start pointing out those, you know, those paltry power play opportunity stats, I'm not sure. It's one of those things that from my perspective, I'd look back about half a season or two thirds of a season. And if it sticks that way, then that's something to be concerned about. I usually find that possession and dangerous opportunities are the sorts of things that lead to power play opportunities, and the Jets being kind of middle of the pack at 5-on-5, I would expect them to be roughly middle of the pack in terms of power play opportunities too. So maybe there is something a little bit odd going on. I can't say for sure.
Murat, I have to ask you about the Jets' fourth line, and it seems like week after week we're talking about the fourth line. Matty Perreault's off of the fourth line. He's on the second line, and then he's back in the fourth line. Jack Roslovic, it was a healthy scratch in Finland. Now he's back on the fourth line. Nick Batan is now on the fourth line, and Jack Roslovic was playing wing, and then Roslovic is now playing center. Two-part question for you on the fourth line. I know that you're a numbers guy, and you talk about, you know, possession and shot attempts, high-danger shot attempts. What are the numbers telling you about the current Jets fourth line? And do you prefer Roslovic right now as a center or on the wing?
I'll start with the second one, actually. I prefer Roslovic on the wing if we were looking at a one-game must-win, let's-sort-this-thing-out situation right now. I think that he's got some development to do as an NHL center. But long term, that's what you hope that he can hit. And I think the fourth line has been excellent of late. So I think early returns are at least, they're not proof, but they're optimistic, I would say, that he can get to what everybody's hoping for him as a center. And I think that he's a very smart player, and he's the sort of guy that I would expect to learn the ins and outs and be able to cover, if not through sheer strength, but through smarts, the sorts of coverage that he'd need to do. Early returns on his weren't so good, but over the last couple of games, this version that we've been able to see, you can certainly thank Matthew Perreault for some of that in terms of possession, because we know his impact on 5-on-5 numbers. He simply wins enough pucks to extend enough zone time and create chances at the right end of the ice. I have been impressed. That's what I'll say with Winnipeg's fourth line, and especially you're starting to see. I'm given enough offensive zone opportunities and dangerous passes, and we've seen that to Andrew Kopp, we've seen that to Roslovic, we've seen it back the other way as well. I think it's an excellent fourth line among the NHL fourth lines that you could look at, probably one of the very best, if not the best. And then the question is, if they're going to take minutes away from anybody, who? And I think that's the privilege of the Winnipeg Jets right now, is being as obscenely deep as they are. And I think something a little bit closer to last night's, I think it was 7 minutes, pardon me if I've got that one wrong, is a little bit more in line with what you'd want from the Jets going forward than the 4, 5, 6 minutes that you've seen before. So all in all, big rant to say, I think it's a phenomenal line. And then if you're going to start trying to promote it, you got to be cautious about whose minutes you take away.
Well, then that leads into my question, because that is the topic du jour of yesterday, at least, was the fact of Christian Vesalainen's recall. You have him recalled up from the Manitoba Moose. Of course, everybody talking about the deadline and him potentially returning to the KHL. But, with your talk around of how good that fourth line has been, where do you see, or if you do you see Christian Vesalainen slotting in for the Jets?
It's such an awkward situation there. Where it seems like it's at least possible that off-ice stuff is impacting the roster decisions so far. I was impressed and worried at the exact same time with Winnipeg's conviction in terms of not taking Vesalainen into Finland. I would have thought that it was a no-brainer, hands down, take him there. But I guess the decision was his start wasn't hot enough to warrant that. And I think that that's a team prioritizing the on-ice results, and now he's on fire in the AHL, and you guys know that quite well. He doesn't get any minutes because that fourth line is so good. I wouldn't displace anybody for the.
Okay, looks like the connection is cutting out, so we are going to thank Murat for joining us on this morning's program. Not sure what's happening with cell phones, but such is technology. And of course, if you want to read more from Murat, check him out in theathletic.com, or you can follow him on Twitter at Winnipeg Murat, M-U-R-A-T. When we come back, we discuss Patrick Laine, his 5-on-5 ice time, and if you think he's maybe getting frustrated with a lack of opportunity. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Yeah, obviously, when your ice time is limited, it's harder to get into the rhythm, but that's something you got to deal with, and just got to work hard every time you're on the ice. It doesn't matter if you play 20 minutes or 2 minutes, you got to put your best out there every time you're on the ice, and that's just something I need to do.
From earlier this week, Winnipeg Jets forward Patrick Laine talking about his ice time, sort of an interesting comment which picks up a little bit of steam, a tweet from Andy Strickland that was yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, Thursday afternoon, a tweet from Andy Strickland, who typically covers the Blues, but is decently plugged in, a good friend of ours.
He's pretty plugged in.
Yeah. This is the tweet. Patrick Laine has only one even strength goal on the year. There are games where he hardly sees legitimate ice time at even strength. Hearing this is becoming an issue for the soon-to-be restricted free agent. That's Andy Strickland, who typically covers the Blues, talking about Patrick Laine and his 5-on-5 ice time. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Saw the Zappia family was at the Jets game last
night. Yes, I saw that too. There was a nice, nice little family photo that Frank tweeted out or put out on Instagram or whatever social media was, I don't recall.
And I think Frank will appreciate this. Our producer and research associate, Sean Asor, sent me this during the break. Pig, hog, and boar essentially describe the same animal, but there are some distinctions. A boar is an uncastrated male domestic pig. I'm glad that he's uncastrated. But it also means a wild pig of any gender. A hog often means a domestic pig that weighs more than 120 pounds. Pigs are also called swine.
Dave?
I got nothing.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you who's a real bore is you reading about the difference in types of pigs and whatnot. Anyways, let's talk about.
Just be thankful that we haven't sent you to Hogtown, wherever that is. Yeah,
we don't know where that ticket would go. Send you to, but it would be somewhere.
Patrick Laine. You know, Andy Strickland's tweet, Patrick Laine's comments, those are post-practice comments from earlier this week. Do you think there's some frustration on Laine's part in terms of his ice time among Jets forwards at 5-on-5 play? It has fluctuated. Overall on the season, he's fifth among Jets forwards in 5-on-5 ice time at 214 minutes and 13 seconds. But there certainly are games where he's been towards the bottom, 8th, 10th, 11th among Jets forwards. So it has fluctuated and gone up and down as he has played on different lines this season and as the Jets look to get consistency and chemistry between Patrick Laine and some of his line mates.
Right, and you just mentioned it, Drew. Overall, you know, Laine is fifth among Jets forwards at 5-on-5 ice time. And obviously, you know, the even strength ice time guys went down when Laine was on the third line and the fourth line. And he's been a staple of that second line for the majority of the season. We saw him on that second, that third line with Tanev and Lowry for what, four games? Five games?
Something like that.
Right? So, I mean, you're going to see his ice time affected a little bit by that. But, you know, I can't speak to whether Laine is unhappy with his ice time or not. I really can't. I mean, because it's all conjecture. It's all speculation at this point. I imagine Laine's frustrated, Drew, with his lack of production at 5-on-5, though. Offensive production. I'm talking about goals. Mm-hmm. I mean, Laine's a goal scorer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I thought at the beginning of the season that Laine was going to win the Rocket Richard Trophy. And, you know, by the way, the way he goes on goal scoring streaks, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he has a couple of hat tricks back to back and he still ends up being, you know, somewhere between 40 to 50 goals. He has that ability. But, you know, last night, I think you saw, you know, big growth in his game. And, you know, Laine, we have to mention him. He obviously got the assist on Kyle Connor's goal and, you know, he scored the Jets' first shootout goal, obviously. You know, that was the first shooter for the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I thought he had an impact on the game at 5-on-5. And, you know, we talked to Murat Ateş last segment about it. And I can't see Paul Maurice taking Laine off that second line with Little and Connor because I think Connor's been the Jets' best forward all year. I really do. And that's not to take anything away from Mark Scheifele or Blake Wheeler because Connor was excellent on that top line and Scheifele and Wheeler are obviously, you know, the Jets' two most consistent offensive producers. But, you know, Laine has to not like the fact that he only has one even strength goal this year.
Which was into an empty net.
Right. You know that he's not happy with that. Until Laine starts scoring at even strength, you know he's... And I think it's going to happen, guys. I mean, I think it could happen, you know, as easily as Monday against Vancouver
Calgary. I thought his game last night was the most impactful at 5-on-5 that he's been...
Yep.
This season. I mean, maybe there's other games that I'm not remembering well right at the moment, but I thought 5-on-5 last night, he was the most noticeable.
Well, he was really good in the global series too. I realized that his goals were on the power play,
mm-hmm.
but you know, you saw the toe drags and you saw, you know, him making the moves in the offensive zone. So I think those two games in Finland really brought the best of Lyonnais' 5-on-5 game.
He was fourth overall in terms of time on ice, even strength time on ice last night for the Jets. 18 minutes and 45 seconds of even strength time on ice, and really the Jets only had 51 seconds of power play time, so he played the majority of the game. He was one of the top forwards in terms of time on ice last night.
You know, Drew, I just wanted to throw this in, and then I want to get Dave in here, but I really don't think that these guys look at their ice time as much as we think. I really don't. I think they're aware of it, but I don't think Lyonnais looks at his ice time and says, oh, I really wish I had a minute and a half more of ice time. I really don't think they talk about that.
Well, you heard his comments that we played off the top there, and he's talking about he's got to do what he can with his ice time. And that
remember,
sometimes
that's in response.
Well, of course, but
so he's asked the question.
He's saying that sometimes it's more difficult when you have when you have less ice time, and he's not saying that I demand more ice time because, frankly, of a lot of the Jets forwards and the way he's been playing, the other forwards deserve more ice time.
And the Shifley Wheeler Ehlers line, and yeah. Obviously before it was the Shifley Wheeler Connor line. I mean, that line is going to get the majority of ice time. That's your best line, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And the second line and the third line are essentially going to get similar ice times because we know Paul Maurice likes to use that TLC line in a shutdown role.
Yeah.
I mean, that line is going to get 13, 14, 15 minutes of ice time. I don't think Patrick Laine is ever going to be a 22-minute a night player. I mean, he's going to get his ice time on the power play, and we saw that in games in which the Jets had a bunch of power plays, right? He plays 6-7 minutes of power play time, and then you have to obviously adjust the even strength time, and he's never going to be a penalty killer. At least for now, he's not going to get first penalty kill or second penalty kill time. So right now, I think Lyonnais is exactly where you want him to be.
If he plays like he played last night, he'll be in the top, and he plays in the second line role. If he plays with Connor and with Little, and that line develops chemistry, he's going to get even strength ice time. When he was playing with Lowry and with Kopp, it was a different line. Or with Tanev and with Kopp, it was a different line. And as a result, the ice time was adjusted accordingly, Dave.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I was trying to think about Andy's source potentially on this. And Mike Lemieux.
Andy Strickland, who had the initial tweet
that we're talking about that we opened the segment with. And I'm inclined to think maybe perhaps it was Mike Lemieux, who's Patrick Laine's agent.
Lemieux related to the former goaltender, Mike Lemieux?
That is.
It's God almighty.
Usually I can pick up on Nezzy's sarcasm. That time I thought he was being serious. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, it was sort of too random of a question to know if he was being serious or not there.
Who played some hockey in St. Louis, and he was doing some media this week. So perhaps Mike Lemieux was the one who was Andy's source on this one, and perhaps he's just doing this to get his agent a little bit of conversation going about his agent, his ice time. And
we're talking about it.
Well, but the fact is that, again, it's a function of trying to, contracts, and Patrick Laine is going to earn himself a big one, and Mike Lute's job is to get him more money, as much money as he can. So that's perhaps where it may have come from. I don't know, of course, but
I don't think Laine has anything to worry about.
No, I think he'll be getting paid for sure. And I think ultimately, I agree. I thought his game was really good yesterday. I thought, there's still some mistakes that are being made, but he's a young player. And again, I, of course, everyone has a tendency to link him to Alexander Ovechkin. And you think about the things that Alexander Ovechkin did when he first came into the league, and how he was seen as somewhat of a quote one trick pony, in the sense that he was a goal scorer, but that was kind of all he did. Mm-hmm. And his game developed more, extensively as he aged. And we got to remember, Patrick Laine is a young guy still learning the NHL game. And so, and again, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about a few segments ago about how I take this long-term approach to hockey player development. And I'm not suggesting you have to wait 10 or 15 years for these guys to develop into the players that they're going to be, but you also can't admonish these guys simply because they're not these veteran hockey players making you can't play like Brian Little having not played as many games as Brian Little, and that's what it comes down to.
And even though Dave Laine is looking for more offensive production at 5-on-5, the most important thing here is that starting with the two games in Finland, the Global Series games, where he scored 4 goals and 3 of them were on the power play, starting with those two games, his overall game has improved at both 5-on-5 and the power play. I think that's the most important thing. The goals are going to come. I mean, I think we'd all be surprised if the goals don't start to come for Patrick Laine at 5-on-5. It's just a matter of time. When is it going to happen? I have no idea. But again,
he had the nasty toe drag against the Capitals on Wednesday night. He almost scored the game-winning goal with seconds to play after forcing the turnover.
He's getting chances. His shooting percentage is ridiculously low. I mean, that's going to improve. That's going to go up. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see it as early as this road trip, and he puts in a few even-strength goals.
Well, we shall see and keep a close eye on it, as, of course, Patrick Laine drives a lot of the conversation in this fair town. When we come back, we do our fantasy hockey segment of the month. Cam Robinson from Dauber Hockey is going to join us next. If you're a poolie, this is the segment for you. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.